Shares of Pandora popping Monday after SiriusXM said it will buy the music streamer in a $3.5 billion all-stock deal to better compete with the biggest streamers in the business, Apple and Spotify. The move by media mogul John Malone, who owns SiriusXM through his company Liberty Media, will create the world's largest audio entertainment company as it seeks to build scale to battle the heavyweight streamers.
New details emerging on the night a Chinese billionaire was accused of raping a 21-year-old University of Minnesota student. Richard Liu, the founder of e-commerce giant JD.com and one of China's most powerful businessmen, has denied any wrongdoing. But exclusive information reviewed by Reuters, including WeChat messages from the alleged victim and security camera footage from a dinner hours earlier, placed the alleged victim with Liu on the night in question.
US handbag maker Michael Kors could be set to buy one of Italy's oldest fashion houses, Versace. The deal is valued at about $2 billion. Michael Kors has made no secret of its ambition to grow its portfolio of high-end brands. Last year, it snapped up British stiletto heel maker Jimmy Choo for over $1 billion. Now Michael Kors is putting a high value on Versace. Last year, the fashion house posted a net profit of just $17 million after recording a loss the year before.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's September 25th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today on the program. We're going to be talking about how perhaps serving on a board, whether it be a corporate board or a not-for-profit board, could help turbocharge your networking ability, also build some leadership skills and business skills. That'll be in our first segment this morning. Andy Davis is here from Board Source. A little bit later in the program, Chicago Ideas Week is on the way, mid-October, and we'll be talking with one of the organizers of that in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But first, let's begin with the markets in Asia this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Markets in Japan and also in Hong Kong are higher this morning. Nikkei up 195 points, almost a full percent. Looking at the rest of the list here, the Hang Seng up 475 points. That's nearly 2%. And the Shanghai up nearly 2.5%, 68.24. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with but not by much. The Nikkei, the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC are up by about 0.25% each. And in the United States, futures are pointing toward a flat to positive open a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 38 points, but NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just single digits. And oil is trading at $72.46 a barrel, which is up about 38 cents. A couple of stories before we get going. This morning, Britain's main opposition Labour Party says it will reject Prime Minister Theresa May's proposed Brexit deal with the European Union when it comes to a vote in Parliament. If Britain and the EU agree on a deal, it must be approved by individual nations before Britain leaves. In the UK, that means a vote by lawmakers, and the math looks ominous for May's minority government. A Labour spokesman says the party will reject the deal along the lines that May has proposed because it does not meet six tests that they've put forward, including protecting workers' rights and retaining access to European markets. Officials in China say they cannot hold talks with Washington on ending an escalating trade dispute, while the United States, in their words, holds a knife to Beijing's neck by imposing tariff hikes. The warning comes after the Chinese government released a report that accuses President Trump of bullying other countries. It dampens hopes for progress toward a settlement of their war over Beijing's technology policy. And Ernst & Young has been slapped with a second sexual harassment claim in less than a year, describing a culture of discrimination and lewd behavior toward women at the accounting firm. A former partner there says a supervisor routinely commented on her breasts, suggested that she should accompany him to strip clubs, and even texted her at 2 a.m. while on a work trip, asking to meet her for drinks. And you heard in the opening montage, Pandora, the deal yesterday by the company, satellite company SiriusXM, to buy Pandora. Pandora stock was higher yesterday, but ended up closing the day down nearly a percent yesterday on the news of that purchase by SiriusXM. We begin this morning with the idea that perhaps being on a board, serving on a board, could help you build leadership and business skills, might even be the power networking move that you've been looking for. Andy Davis is with us this morning, the Director of Education at BoardSource, to talk more about this. Andy, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you this morning, because this is a topic I think that we've hit a couple of times on the show, and that is how we can network more and build the skills that are sort of hard to hone, the leadership skills, the interpersonal skills, those skills that are kind of hard to come by unless you have some sort of experience, and this notion that perhaps serving on a board might help. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely would. I think that there's not a lot of opportunities where you get to kind of practice this business acumen of being a fiduciary oversight of an organization, but at the same time, you really have to put in play those team working skills. Like you said, you're able to network, but you're also able to bring your whole self to a body that is making really important decisions about the future of an entire organization. So you're having to put yourself out there and compromise, find that kind of radical middle sometimes, and work with others. And while doing that, you're getting to know those individuals better, hopefully opening up your network for future opportunities.
Andy, what kind of decisions? I mean, I guess it depends on the board you're on versus, let's say, a corporate board versus a not-for-profit board. But what are some of the kinds of decisions that you have to make, some of the kinds of duties that a person might have?
I mean, every nonprofit board member, even corporate board members, right? So they're all corporations. They've got those legal duties, those duties of care, loyalty, obedience to be a fiduciary. So you are really overseeing the future, the strategic direction of the organization. We're trying to stay out of kind of the micromanagement. We're not worried about the day-to-day, the management decisions of the organization. We're worried about the long-term, the governance of the organization and staying out of kind of meddling in the affairs of the chief executive or the staff, but you're really focused on the direction, long-term future of the organization.
Right, and the big one there is money, making decisions about money. That's a huge one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, no organization can operate without resources, and so, when you come to these types of opportunities to serve on a board, there's really it's important to have that kind of financial acumen so you understand what you're getting yourself into, and that goes back to those legal duties.
Tell us a little bit about BoardSource. What do you do there? What is that BoardSource.org about?
Yeah, so at BoardSource, our mission is really to inspire and support excellence in nonprofit governance and board and staff leadership. We do that through several different ways. We're a consulting and training organization. We're a publications organization. We have more nonprofit governance titles than anyone else, and we also have a membership arm. But really what we're here to do is just to disseminate resources to help create better leadership in nonprofit organizations. We're also a nonprofit. We're a 501c3. So it is our mission and our duty to try to get as much positive information out there for people to be able to consume and understand what their role is as a board or staff leadership in a nonprofit organization.
So being on a board, if that's something that somebody wants to do, it's not like you're dropped on an island. There are lots of resources available to help if you've never done it before.
That's right. Yeah, we've got a ton of resources on our website, anywhere from, the basic roles and responsibilities all the way up to really in-depth understanding of nonprofit financials. When people come into these types of opportunities, it really is a volunteer, for nonprofits anyway, it is a volunteer opportunity. So we understand that people are giving of themselves, giving of their time. What we want to be able to do is support them in that endeavor.
Andy, hang on with us. We're going to continue with Andy Davis of BoardSource. The website, again, is BoardSource.org. When we come back, we'll talk about what kind of qualities a person might need to be on a board, especially those not-for-profit boards. Andy, I'm curious, what is a good quality for somebody that a board might be looking for? Is it something that we should go looking for, or will boards come and find us?
Well, I think that that's a great question, and it's one of the questions that we get most often. I don't think very often, unless you're putting yourself out there, that boards are going to be able to find you. You might have a great profile, but you need to make yourself noticeable to the organization, right? So what we want to do is approach this kind of like dating. If you're going to be engaged with somebody, if you're going to enter into this kind of serious relationship where you are a fiduciary for the organization, you need some time to be able to get to know each other, to be able to ask the right questions. It's like a job interview. You want them to be asking the right questions of you, finding out if they're missing something that you can bring to the organization. And then also, like I said earlier, this is really a volunteer experience. So how much time and effort and energy are you ready to put into the organization? So having those conversations about expectations up front can really go a long way to making sure that both sides are getting something meaningful out of the relationship.
You talk about the volunteer aspect of this. Goes along with this, at least for some of the not-for-profits. One of your roles, once you take on this volunteer position, might actually be raising money, and that could be a big job, can't it?
Yeah, it can be a huge job, and it depends on what size organization you're with, where they're at in their life cycle, how sophisticated they are, what kind of staff they have around fundraising. But one of the duties of every nonprofit board member is to ensure resources, and that goes to that fundraising piece. And so we have to be ready to bring that part of ourselves to an organization. A lot of times in smaller organizations, that means that you're going to be doing solicitation, you're going to be making the ask, so make sure that you're comfortable around that, getting that kind of training up front. And in those more sophisticated organizations, a lot of times they have development staff that are going to work with you, maybe to help share your network or help you get comfortable with working with those bigger donors, seeing what you can bring to the table for the organization to help continue to raise funds.
Lots of times there's criticism of corporate boardrooms for not being as diverse as the companies that they run. Is that the case with some of these boards of directors that we're talking about, or are these boards that we're talking about a little bit more diverse?
No, sadly, nonprofit boards are doing not a lot better. They're not much better in the diversity category. We put out a report every 2 years called Leading with Intent. You can download it for free at boardsource.org. But that research shows us that really since we started doing this report in 1994, boards are no more diverse today. Actually, they're less diverse, more white than they were in 1994. So we've really got a lot of room for improvement, and that's just not in the racial and ethnic piece. That's in generational diversity, in gender diversity as well. We see the numbers are better in smaller nonprofits, but the larger the organization gets, the worse these numbers get.
So this might be an opportunity for young people and people of color to get a spot on one of these boards, to go and join one of these organizations and push themselves to be on a board to change that situation.
Definitely. I think that there's a lot of talk out there. There's a lot of noise around the need to do better around these types of issues. And so I would encourage anybody that's listening, that's interested in an organization that has a passion for their mission, to reach out. You know, send your resume, set up an appointment with the board chair or the executive director, just to talk about what opportunities might be there. More than ever, we're hearing that organizations are struggling to find the right mix of individuals on their boards, and so they're putting themselves out there more than they have, and so we're encouraging folks who are interested to get out there and reach out to the organization, see if there's a good fit.
Andy, what are more positives, if you want to think of some more here, or maybe even more negatives that we haven't discussed?
Yeah, I would just encourage folks, again, to think about it from that aspect of, how much time do you have to have to devote to an organization? What are you willing to bring to that place that you say that you care deeply about? One of the biggest problems we see with board services that there's not clear expectations on both sides before joining a board. So people don't understand when they're coming to these board meetings what's really expected of them between the meetings, from committee responsibilities, making sure we talked about the fundraising piece, but asking about what your actual personal contribution might need to be. A lot of organizations have give or gets. So having those conversations up front is really, really important just to make sure that both sides are going to get something beneficial out of the partnership.
Yeah, and if you're doing this to not only help the organization but build build those leadership and business skills we're talking about and do that networking. If you get on there and this is something that you've made a mistake doing, that could actually hurt your chances of improving those things, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely right. I mean, you know, you're going to be judged and evaluated on your performance as a board member. And like we said, no great job opportunity would let you start a job without letting you know what the expectations are. So if you are thinking about joining a board and you're not having those discussions about, you know, full responsibilities of being in this position, so you know up front what to expect, that's just something to look out for and make sure that you're asking those right questions before you get on the board, because nobody wants to invest this much time and energy and then 6 months in, both sides figure out maybe it's just not a good fit.
Right. Andy, a good conversation this morning. Thanks for joining us here on the program.
Thank you so much, Steve. You have a great Tuesday, okay?
You too. Andy Davis is the Director of Education at BoardSource. You can find them online at boardsource.org. I know most of our conversation was talking about nonprofits today, but I saw one report recently that if you're lucky enough to land a job on one of those corporate boards, those are not volunteer positions in a lot of cases. Those corporate board people get paid sometimes as much as six figures or more to be on those boards, but obviously those are much harder to get on. Again, boardsource.org for more on this conversation.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Oxalo Therapeutics, which is developing a drug to treat and prevent kidney stones, has been awarded $2.3 million from the National Institute of Health and is one of 26 startups competing in the finals of the Mass Challenge, a startup accelerator in Boston. A former Chicago-based OpenTable employee has been charged with fraud after allegedly making hundreds of bogus restaurant reservations using competing reservation system Reserve. The employee was fired in March. And Chicago startup Tempus, which uses genomic sequencing and artificial intelligence to fight cancer, recently launched a new mobile app called Tempus Labs. The new platform allows physicians to securely access in-depth patient information. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Chicago Ideas Week is coming October 15th through the 21st. Sona Jones is the Chief Operating Officer of Chicago Ideas Week and is with us this morning. Sona, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's exciting because you know, the schedule is quite good this year. I mean, it is every year, but you've got a couple of really big names coming in, lots of good programs. Tell us about Ideas Week, first of all, though.
Yeah, so Chicago Ideas Week was created about 8 years ago, and it was really created in response to, you know, the fact that there are all these ideas festivals throughout the country, and they were all really cost prohibitive to the average person. And so Brad Keywell, our founder, came together and said, well, why don't we build something that's accessible for everyone in Chicago? So Ideas Week is one of the world's largest affordable ideas festivals, happening October 15th to 21st, and it's about 150 events throughout Chicago and really in every corner. You know, we've got stage programs at the Harris Theater and Venue 610 and MCA, and then we've also got these hands-on experiences called labs, which happen throughout the city at 85 different locations.
The labs are the cool part of this, I think, having covered this in the past. And it really is the chance to not only get together and talk about ideas, come up with inspiration, but also to sort of put them in action, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And that's really the point of the labs and why they were created, because I think the stage programs are amazing because they do give you that inspiration and you are sitting next to someone completely different from you, from whom you may be able to learn. But what's really cool about labs is that they're hyper-focused on individuals and organizations throughout Chicago who are doing something very innovative. And to see that in your own backyard and to experience how they got to where they are, I think is really inspiring and encourages a lot of our audience members to go out and think about, okay, well, what can I do differently in my life? You know, is it a new volunteer opportunity? Should I get a new job? Should I start a new business? It's just a really inspiring and, as you said, ideas into action way to think about what we do.
And you've sort of taken the lab idea, too, and put it on idea the One Day Ideas Day.
Yeah.
And this is, tell us about what you're doing this year differently.
Really, you know, one of the things we hear about Chicago Ideas Week is, you know, I'm sitting there in the audience and I'm so inspired, and then I go home and I don't know what to do. And so what we thought was, well, what if at the moment of inspiration you could actually get out there and take action? So it's at the Harris Theater on Friday, October 19th, and in the morning you're going to hear from, you know, people like DeRay McKesson, who's an activist, and C.J. Chivers, a journalist for the New York Times. And you're going to be sitting at this, you know, in the theater hearing these speakers talk about how they've made their world better. You'll see these groundbreaking performances. And then at lunch, you actually are going to get on the bus, and we're partnering with Chicago Cares, and you're going to go to a Chicago neighborhood with us. And this year we're spotlighting Bronzeville, North Lawndale, and Englewood. And then you're going to go and meet with a community organization in one of those neighborhoods and work with them on a community activation. And really, you know, get to know that neighborhood and your fellow, you know, people in the city. And hopefully build a long-lasting relationship with that neighborhood so that you feel the need to take impact all year round and, you know, understand how you can be a participant in action.
Very cool. And I know the number of speakers this year, a good lineup as well. I know Mitch Landrieu is going to be the former mayor of New Orleans. He's rumored to be possibly a presidential candidate in the future. Some others as well. Talk to us about the speaker lineup.
Yeah, you know, he's actually speaking at the program that I think I'm most excited about. It's opening night, and it's called Raising Your Hand, What Leadership Looks Like in 2018. And it's really, like, based on the premise of, you know, a lot would argue that there's sort of like a dearth of leadership kind of in the traditional spaces. And so we're bringing together people who have sort of like raised their hand and said, you know what, I'm a leader, even though you may have not thought of me in that way. And so that program includes David Hogg, who's one of the Parkland shooting survivors and now a gun rights activist. He's a high school student, right? And he's going to be talking with another Chicago high school gun control activist. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, Mitch Landrieu, who his story is, to me, is so interesting because he was that guy, you know, last year when we were, there was a great national debate happening around Confederate statues. He was the one that kind of gave this speech out of nowhere about, you know, why it's important to take down Confederate statues, even though it would have been deeply unpopular in his home state. I'm also beyond excited for Ellie Kemper, who's going to be speaking at Life's Big Questions. And one of the other ones is Boots Riley, who's speaking at this new program called Radical Creators, which is all about people who create something from nothing and end up having an outsized impact on just culture and society. So those are some of my program highlights. I'm also perennially excited about Jose Antonio Vargas. He's also speaking at that leadership talk. And he's really all about, you know, he's actually an undocumented immigrant and outed himself, and he actually is still undocumented, doesn't actually have a permanent home. And, you know, his platform is all about what it means to be an American.
I know a lot of the conversations are going to be around violence in Chicago, a couple of the lab sessions specifically. If you had to look, zoom out at Chicago and say, well, what ideas do we need to fix our problems here? That would probably be one of the big ones, isn't it?
And I think, you know, it's not necessarily looking just at violence in Chicago, but really looking at what are those underlying causes and what does the entire city need to do to make some changes, right? Because it's not just about the violence on the surface level. You know, a lot of what we're looking at, the one conversation that I'm so excited about is it's called the death gap. And it's about how if you live in one part of the city, your life expectancy is 16 years longer than if you live in another part of the very same city. And so what are all the different factors of health that contribute to that? There are a number of, as you said, there are a number of stage programs and labs that talk about that.
And you've mentioned that this is the eighth year for Chicago Ideas Week.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you been able to go back yet and give a report card to how you've been doing? I mean, have you, give us a sense of the ideas and the action that have followed some of these events.
Yeah, you know, it's really in three different buckets. Like I say, the big thing is, you know, the concept is to democratize ideas. And so every year we have about 30,000 people who attend. So it's a pretty big number of people that maybe wouldn't be able to experience something like this were it not for the lower price point. The second is, and this is, you know, this is, I think, really interesting, are the number of anecdotal stories we get from people who said, hey, I went to a Chicago Ideas Week program. It sparked an idea with me, and then I connected with either a speaker or I connected with someone I was sitting next to, and I made something really big happen. Like, we had a student come in from a university on the East Coast. She's actually an immigrant from Africa. She attended a Chicago Ideas Week program on AI and then ended up creating a robotics program at Yale, which is, you know, you hear stories like that, and it's really amazing. And then the third piece that I'm most proud of is our youth program. So Chicago Ideas in the last 5 years has started doing considerable work with students across Chicago, primarily high school students. We work with 18 different youth partner organizations throughout the city, and we end up fostering about 3,000 student connections every year. So what that means is we bring them to our program. They get to interact with speakers in a small group on a small group basis. And then we also take about 40 of those kids, and we do a year-round professional development series with them where we do mentoring. They come to our events all year round. We connect them with companies for job shadows and internships. And so that's probably what I'm most proud about, what we're very excited about scaling throughout the city.
We've been talking about Chicago Ideas Week, but you've just told us that this is more than a week. This is something that happens year-round.
Yes, yes. This year we actually we had about 60 programs across the year beyond just what's happening during the week.
Sona, best of luck to everyone. Have a good week with Chicago Ideas Week coming up. How can people get involved and find tickets and make sure they attend some of these events?
So you can go to chicagoideas.com, and you'll find tickets right there. And then I encourage you to sign up for our newsletter there as well, because that's what we're still announcing speakers every single day, and it's where you'll be the first to hear about those.
Sona, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Have a great one.
You too. Sona Jones, the Chief Operating Officer at Chicago Ideas Week. Again, the website, again, chicagoideas.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 70 points. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at the weekly crop report yesterday, we find corn 69%, good to excellent, down 1% from last week. Same happened to soybeans, 68%, good to excellent. That's down 1% from last week. But 16% of the nation's corn crop has now been harvested. 72% of the corn crop is mature. Soybean harvest, 14% complete compared to 6% a week ago. And while we're focusing on trade negotiations with NAFTA, the European Union, Japan, and China, there was a trade agreement hammered out yesterday and initialed. President Trump and South Korean President Moon Jae-in signed a free trade agreement yesterday. Trump hailed as a historic milestone in trade. And it's interesting, the comment that Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said, "I'm optimistic. The dominoes will continue to fall in place. Chorus with Korea, a new NAFTA, and new agreements with the European Union, Japan, and most notably China. As an avid sportsman, I would say, put this one in the bag. Keep hunting for more. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson."
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, September 25th. On the calendar today, the Conference Board will publish a consumer confidence report for the month. Also, we'll get the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. The Red Book is due out. Also, FHFA House Price Index due. The Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index is out. State Street Investor Confidence Index also coming today. And the FOMC meeting begins. Two-day meeting of the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee with a likely rate hike tomorrow. At the end of that meeting, on the earnings calendar, KB Home and Nike earnings today. Also, Manchester United will release earnings, and Cintas also reporting earnings.